Welcome everybody to another day in the TeleSummit. It's about how you live, taking the fear out of conversations about advanced care planning, serious illness, and end-of-life care. And we are truly honored today to have the president of the North Carolina State President of AARP, Dr. Catherine Severa. Is it Severi? Help pronounce your name for me.
Severier.
See? With a little accent in there. I'm so sorry. Welcome.
Thanks.
It's so honored to have you. This woman is so talented, so credentialed. She's got such an impressive bio, but I'm actually going to read bits and parts of it because I really want to get into the conversation with Catherine. So I'm just going to share a little bit about your fabulous background with everybody. So like I said, she's the North Carolina State President for AARP. In recent years, actually, Catherine and her husband, David, worked in Europe and East Africa to assist nations in population health, disease prevention, and public policy. Their consulting practice is currently directing a $1.1 million Duke Endowment Grant project focused on developing online capabilities for investigating and communicating individual health choices. Catherine is a PhD, an RN, an AOCN. She's got extensive background in clinical nursing, academic cancer center administration, and health policy development. She was founding executive director and COO of the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, which develops and sets clinical guidelines for cancer treatment worldwide. She was also the executive vice president for community programs and publications for the American Diabetes Association in Washington, D.C., where she led the ADA's focus on the Preventative Health Partnership, a joint initiative with the American Cancer Society and the American Heart Association. She has served in leadership roles and on so many boards nationwide for national organizations. And she actually is currently on one of the boards, is the Carolina Center for Hospice and End of Life Care. So much in her bio that I did not read, but just please understand, we have got a true expert in many, many dimensions with us today. So again, welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
Honored to have you. So what I'd like to do is just kind of start off with broad question. What have you observed about people as they learn to deal with life-limiting diseases?
Well, you know, one of the things that I've had the honor of doing is sitting with and taking care of and being part of a lot of families when they are dealing with difficult decisions. And the thing that I learned more than anything else was that we have an incredible amount of strength in us as individuals. And we have this wonderful opportunity when we do get faced with a crisis to take it on and to let it both grow us as people as well as not stymie us. And I don't mean to discount the fact that when somebody's got a cancer diagnosis or an HIV diagnosis or a new chronic disease like diabetes, that there's not a lot that has to be taken into account. But families and people have the ability to really take charge of their own illness. And to address what does this mean in the scope of my entire life, so that the illness itself, it doesn't define them. Rather, they say the illness is just a part of who I am.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the ways in which you have found people that can embrace that and those that sort of struggle with owning it and putting their hands on the steering wheel.
You know, I think it's a couple of things that trip us up more than anything. One is that we are all in relationships with a lot of people. And as we all know, if we think about our own families, there are people that understand us better than others. And there is history that went well in some situations and not so well in others. And when these kinds of situations come up, it's really important for people to try to either resolve those situations or acknowledge that they exist and move beyond them. And what I saw as a real tragedy was when the families and people didn't come together to really do the hard work it takes to get past those things, because end of life decisions are really predicated on who you trust in your life to help you make the best decisions when you can't speak for yourself. So you need to be able to trust that person, and forgiveness and trust over a lifetime are sometimes very difficult to deal with.
Sure. And end of life is a very sad topic, whether you're talking about it well in advance, which we hope everybody does, or if you're suddenly faced with something, a tough diagnosis. And this telesummit is all about taking the fear out of having those conversations.
Absolutely.
So whether it's well in advance or now we're in the middle of a situation. And what I've said a couple of times in some of these interviews is, and I, as many families as you've worked with, have you found that when they do enter into these conversations, it strengthens their bond and their relationship, and it takes them to a deeper, more intimate place with each other?
No question. And it gives, if you can think of the word joy and tragedy sitting together with somebody, when that work has been done, people have the opportunity to experience that peace at the same time that they are grieving. And those two things really in humans sit amazingly well together in some pretty difficult situations. And the more I've worked with people, the more I have seen the joy that can come out of those last weeks, months, years together that wouldn't be there if they didn't do some of the tough work to start with.
Yeah, it's just a whole higher level of understanding.
No question.
Just, yeah, so wonderful. Thank you for that. So are there things that people can do to help themselves make the best possible decisions?
Well, I think it's sort of trite to say it, but I'll say it anyway. We all make the best decisions when we're well informed. And when we take on a question or a subject and say, I want to know enough about this that I can make a good decision for myself and be able to communicate that decision to the people around me that are going to ultimately be there and potentially have to speak for me when I can't speak for myself. So this whole movement that we've seen in the United States in the last few years of shared decision making, and really us as healthcare providers stepping back and saying, I am your assistant in this. This is your life that is very complicated and has many facets to it. One of which is how you're going to live with these health issues that you've got now. How can I help you? How can I inform you about the things that are going to help you make good decisions about, do I take this treatment? Do I take this medicine? How do I use my time wisely to have the best quality of life? And we really are talking here about the quality of life. And part of that is how the relationships end up going. And literally just how we feel every day when we're dealing with a chronic disease.
Right. I will share a quick story that speaks exactly to what you just said, and it's really pretty shocking. I am at a conference, and the speaker starts to talk about Mr. Smith, and he had this terrible disease, and then it got better, and 10 years later it came back, and suddenly he was faced with, this is really kind of serious. And he ultimately died in relatively short amount of time. And the wife was completely dumbfounded. She had no clue that her husband was that ill. Mm-hmm. the speaker then said she was talking about her own parents, and the speaker was a palliative care doctor.
Yep.
So an expert in pain and symptom management, and both of her parents were college educated people, one of which was a professor. I can't remember if it was the mom or the dad, but you've got very intelligent people who have a palliative care physician in their family, mm-hmm. and they still felt uninformed.
Absolutely.
And you ask yourself, how could that possibly happen?
Well, I'm going to, you can tell from the gray hair that I've been at this rodeo for a while. And one of the things that has been the case a lot in our society, and we're doing better, but it's still there, is the self-protectiveness that we have among ourselves and our families. I would bet that those parents were trying to protect, if you will, the rest of their family from what was going on. Mm-hmm. And saw that, particularly if they were older, as what older people and parents do. And in prior generations, we've been very stoic about these things.
Right.
And if you were to ask them their motivation, it would have been all about protecting the other person. What we don't realize is that sometimes what we consider as a gift of protection ends up shortchanging the other person with the time to do the work they need to do and ask the questions and clarify the things that they need to clarify in order to keep walking.
Well, and also what you just said, get the information they need so that they can make informed decisions.
No question. And I've seen that quite a bit. And one of the things that I started doing somewhere in my conversations with people was probing with them how they felt about their loved ones and what constituted a way to give them as much as they could in this situation. Because I will tell you, most people that are dying are more worried about their family than they are themselves. Oh, what is he or she going to do? How are they going to feel? I've got to protect them. And all of those things basically encourage, without meaning to, the person to shut down and to really be protective of what they're thinking and feeling.
Right.
I was on the phone just yesterday. A friend of mine has got metastatic breast cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I called to check on her, and I got her husband instead, and she was out. And so I said, "So how are you doing?" And he said, "I'm taking it every day as I can." And I said, "Well, are you guys..." He says, "But I don't want to worry her about what I'm feeling."
Right.
And my immediate response was, well, what would it take for you just to tell her that you feel protective and start that conversation? And he said, "Well, I guess I could do that without just falling apart." And I said, "Well, you know, these kinds of conversations are the ones you're going to remember later, because you come to a new place together."
Right.
And so it's that kind of thing that I've seen a lot in my interactions with people. And the more we can position the gift of talking and the gift of love and the gift of communication with one another as a gift.
Right. Don't be afraid of it.
Don't be afraid of it, but give it.
Mm-hmm.
The more these difficult times become tolerable. And I'm always amazed once those communication channels are open at people saying to me, I'm having the best discussions in my life and I'm having the best relationships in life. And I truly don't want to minimize the fact that it's also very difficult. But when you walk into a room and you see a family there and they're laughing and reminiscing and telling stories and they're 2 days away from losing mom, what a gift.
Wow, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And one of our experts in this told the story about her sister, her younger sister, was in the end of her life at a really pretty early age. And she learned so many things from her dying sister,
mm-hmm.
about, you know, what she wanted and what she needed and what she didn't want, and if she was annoying her, or if she needed her to hold her hand. Or, I mean, she just, once because they went, there was a time that they, she was afraid to talk too much about mm-hmm. what was going on. And then once the sister said, no, we need to talk about this. Mm-hmm. It can make for some of the most memorable, cherished moments that you'll ever have.
No question.
It absolutely is the truth. Mm-hmm. So I've got a couple other questions. One is talk about regret. And another is, what does it mean to take charge of your health? Mm-hmm. And then I also want you to get into all the wonderful resources AARP has
right.
for people, who is AARP for, all that. So let's touch on regret. Let's talk about regret.
Well, one of the things that I think most of us, we're so caught up when we're in a life-threatening or a difficult situation with the here and now, that it's really hard to imagine ourselves 6 months from now or a year from now when that person isn't here. And so one of the, and I'm going to call it an exercise, but it's an assignment that I frequently have given people, is to ask this question. Remove yourself from the situation today, sit quietly, and think about this person and imagine what it is that you would, if they were gone today, wish you had asked them or wish you had done with them. And identify those things so that at the end of their life, when they're gone, you're saying, I wish I had. Now, I'll give you a very simple example. I grew up in a multi-generational Southern family, and I had the blessing of being with my great-grandparents until I was 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
My great-grandmother was an amazing cook.
Awesome.
And I have spent the last 40 years trying to replicate bread pudding. That sounds like a silly thing, but I've had so many people say, I can't make mom's cake. I can't do this thing. And while that sounds little, for me, if I could replicate my great-grandmother's bread pudding, every time I would put it in my mouth, I would be remembering her. And that would have moved from a distant memory to carrying her with me.
Exactly.
And so finding what we're going to regret and asking that and then go for it. I mean, you just got to go for it. You may not get everywhere. Sometimes the regret is that we didn't take the big world cruise.
Right.
And that may not be possible. But there are other things that we'll find that will really begin to close those gaps. So I frequently bring up the term regret with people. So, and I do it on both sides. You know, what else are you wishing that you had told somebody?
Right, right. That's a wonderful, wonderful idea. You know, think about them being gone right now before they're really gone.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that one thing that you meant to say and didn't, or wanted to do and didn't, or that's a really wonderful, wonderful idea.
Well, and it resonates with people. It's simple, but it is how we carry the people we care about with us when they're gone.
Right.
It's through memories and things that we did. So what will you have regretted?
And for me, you know, I wanted to be able to tell my mother and my dad, you know, that they were a wonderful mother and a wonderful dad. And some people say, well, I'm afraid if I say that now, they think, oh, well, you think I'm going to die tomorrow. Well, no, you can tell them that every day if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid. Again, get the fear out of the way and go for it, like you said.
Absolutely. My father died when I was 17 in a car accident.
Oh, gracious. I'm so sorry.
He was a young man. And of course, at 17, you think your parents are already old, but you also think you're going to have them forever. And one of the things that I think this is where I learned about the regret piece, was he and I had not been getting along as typical of teenagers. And fortunately for me, about a week before he died, we had dinner together. And we had a wonderful conversation, and we left one another with great feelings of reconciliation over some things we had disagreed with.
How wonderful.
And when he died a week later, I was devastated. But after I was able to get perspective later, the one thing I can say is, I'm so glad we had that dinner.
Yes.
Because I don't have to carry with me that the last conversation we had was one where we were disagreeing.
Right.
Yeah. And that's sort of where I got the regret thing, yeah. But it's very important, I think.
I think I couldn't agree with you more. And so what does it mean to take charge of your own health?
Well, that's the other thing that I learned early on as a nurse giving chemotherapy, was I could have two people who walked in and had the same treatment going on, and one person was just passive and letting us do whatever it was we recommended and feeling very helpless in being able to control what was happening in their own life. Everything from what they ate to, giving us feedback about, I really want to put my treatment off a day because I have a family member coming in. But just the assertiveness of all this. And what I understand is that I'm with you as a healthcare provider, if as an outpatient, maybe sometimes 10 minutes or 30 minutes, and then there's the rest of your life between now and that next appointment. And that's your life to take charge of. And so I just think the more we feel empowered as patients to be in charge of how do we organize this? How do I cope with what's going on? Mm-hmm. The more we can do that. And I'm not by any means saying that the healthcare team doesn't have an important role in that, but it truly is a partnership.
Right.
And when you have particularly a chronic disease that you may live with for years, the sooner you take charge, the better not only the physical outcome, but the emotional outcome, and the more the disease doesn't own you, but you manage it.
That's right.
And so I'm a big believer in our ability as people to take charge.
And don't you think the medical professionals that are watching and the general community that's watching, caregivers or people with this serious illness right now, I think the medical professionals don't ever want to they don't want the patient to feel like they're giving up on them. Mm-hmm. And so they sometimes will suggest, the 15th round of chemo or, kind of the extreme.
No question.
Potentially, you're not going to get the results you want, but let's just keep going. I think the book Being Mortal speaks to, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. And
right.
So I think if it is a team approach, and this is a discussion and a conversation, and together let's figure out what you mm-hmm. will make you happy, what will, the way this thing rolls forward is the way you want it to roll forward, given the current situation, the current information that we have. It's so important that they do it together.
No question. And it opens up all kinds of discussions. It's about how much is enough, when do I stop, how much long, what do I want to do? And in diseases like diabetes, where there isn't an end that we can necessarily say, we've got a year to live here or 2 years, it's how do I want to live with my disease and how do I want to see the quality of my life unfold and what can I do to take charge of that? So it the whole idea of engaging with whatever it is that we have and engaging with it and owning it mm-hmm. is, I think, a critically important role for us to take on
right.
For just the whole quality of our life.
That's right. That's right. I'm so excited for you to share so many things and resources that AARP offers people that I would bet my next check most of the people watching just had no clue. Yeah. So please share with them all the support AARP can offer and who is the right person to join or get involved and all that.
Okay. Thank you. I joined AARP before I was 50 because I was married to someone who was older than me. And I got my invitation to be an AARP member at 44. And so I have now been a member way longer than I want to tell. But what I have found is that I've needed different things at different times in my own personal life. And I started out mostly needing information. And AARP has a wealth of information about how do we age.
Right.
Everything from how do we manage our finances to what kinds of insurance do we need to when should we take Social Security to what are the normal changes of aging? When should I worry when I have a symptom? So there's a whole big information piece of AARP that just sits there that's really valuable. But there's also, and then there's the piece that I think the public in general recognizes, and that's the little squirrel that's been on TV talking about healthcare reform or the commercial about things like Part B Medicare insurance. So for all of those things, if you need any of those, your little small amount of due, which is around $16 to $18.
It's next to nothing.
It's nothing. Mm-hmm. But what I found being both a volunteer for AARP and on the receiving end is it's the personal relationships that you can get with other people through AARP. One of my favorite things that we have is a group of caregiver courses. And I don't know, I was just appalled, and that's the right word, at the number of people we have in this country who are today caregivers. You know, I just had no idea. In North Carolina alone, there's well over a million caregivers. And caregivers are doing so much to care for the people they love, but they're unsung heroes. Mm-hmm. And they need as much attention in their own rights because they get tired, they're at risk for getting sick, they need resources in the community. And one of the things we've done is really developed a lot of material around caregiving. And part of that includes things like addressing chronic disease and addressing end of life. There's actually in our caregiver course materials and a module that is about how do we go about letting our wishes be known. Mm-hmm. And what we find is that our younger constituents that are the caregivers are using AARP resources as much as their parents because they're really looking for answers to questions.
So are you saying that if I'm in my 30s, I can join AARP?
You can join at any time.
Isn't that amazing?
That's a question that I get asked a lot. Our sweet spot, if you will, is the 50 and older person. In large part because in this country, the Older Americans Act starts to define things that can and can't be offered to people at age 50.
Right.
And that 50 to 64-year-old, 65-year-old, until they're on Medicare or Social Security, is at risk.
Sure.
There's a lot of need for information. We are also that sandwich generation at that point. I know so many people who are 50 who are still raising children, but who have elderly parents.
Right.
And so that is a group that we really want to help focus on. But we've got other work that we do in areas like finance and retirement planning that needs to start much earlier. You can't start saving for retirement at 60 and have nearly the success you can if you start to understand your financial world when you're in your 30s and 40s.
That's right.
So it's that kind of material that's there. When I think about AARP, what I think about is the question of how do we live the best we can in this world and manage the resources and the things that we need. So think finance, think about how we live in our homes, and what a community around us needs to be, is best for us, and how do we give to other people. So this whole caregiving piece.
Right.
The website that AARP has is phenomenal for that. One of the things they have is a whole section on caregiving, and it literally is caregiving@AARP.org. And there's so many questions that get answered there.
Wonderful. And I was so excited for you to share that anybody can join, because I did not know that until you and I spoke a few weeks ago. I think most people did not know that. So I was very excited for that point to be made. But because, to your point, AARP is quite a large organization, we have people from every state in the country, I'm sure, listening in or watching this. If they feel like the website's like too big, too much information, like, does everybody have, I'm assuming each state has a state president like yourself, and then is there a regional, what is the best way for somebody, we got a 30-year-old listening going, I didn't know I could join AARP, what should they do?
Well, if you're at all computer, you're willing to take it on. If you go to the AARP.org site, you can put the state that you live in, and that will allow you to both find contacts there and also see the activities that are going on. One of my favorite AARP activities is called Movies for Grownups. And we literally bring in a movie that's a current run movie. It's just, you know, been in the box office, and it's Movies for Grownups, and people get together. And the last one I saw was Hacksaw Ridge, which,
oh my gosh,
is amazing. So it's things like that that you'll find when you go to your state website. The other thing is, we are very volunteer centric. A lot of the things I'm just talking about, the caregiver courses, people like me teach.
Okay.
So there are ways that you can find a way for yourself to be a contributor back to your community. We have a program called Life Reimagined, which is, what's my next chapter? What am I going to do next? And it takes you through questions about, what am I going to be in my next chapter? I was going to say, what am I going to be when I grow up? But I didn't really intend to entirely grow up. So.
Right. Right.
What is the next chapter?
Right.
But
I think if people also reach out to their local hospice, I know that we have done, the hospice I work with, we've done a lot of co-hosting of caregiving workshops and just different topics with AARP. So there's all kinds of different ways you can find who is that local person that I could talk with.
Absolutely. No question about it. We just did a program here. I live in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we did a program just last week on care for the caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
We had a group of folks that have been meeting together for a while, and it was, how do you take care of yourself in the midst of a high stress environment?
Exactly.
And it's that kind of thing that we really want to give support and encouragement to people as we're walking through all this.
Wonderful. Well, I love the fact that the AARP.org website, all you have to do is click on your state. And then that's going to drill you down to the local people that you would.
And if you're still more of a paper person, they have a monthly magazine, and you can still get paper when you want it. But when you don't want it, you can leave it somewhere else.
Right. Wonderful. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. We're going to wrap up. Are there any last words of wisdom or any parting advice you would like to share with all the viewers?
You know, I guess what I want to say in the midst of this climate that we're in our country, there are so many people who are still very dedicated to, and I think the majority of us that say we're all in this together. And so my urging for all of us is that we look for those folks wherever we are, and then remember that they're in it with us, and say thank you to them and let them say thank you back, and we keep walking.
Well, that's lovely. It all comes down to just being kind helping everybody out. And I know one of our hospice doctors, we have an inpatient facility, and when she would leave her office, she had just a little tiny short walk to go to the inpatient facility. And she said she had this little mantra that went through her head as she was walking over there, and it was, everybody's just doing the best they can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Catherine, oh my gosh, this has been wonderful. Once again, everybody, this was, I'm going to try this, Catherine Sevier, Lordy, I'm sorry, S-E-V-I-E-R.
If you were in Tennessee, it would be Severe.
She is the North Carolina State President of AARP and an extremely accomplished medical professional, nurse, has been on tons of boards, just done so much wonderful work in DC and so many different places. So you'll be able to read all about her. We'll attach her bio to this video. And just thank you so much for your time. It's a real, real honor to have you as a part of this wonderful series. And I'm just thrilled everybody now knows anybody can join AARP.
Absolutely.
So go check it out today.
Thank you.
All right, Catherine. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.